Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Rolling, rolling, rolling. This here program's rolling. No singing. It is the 31st day of March, 2016. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And all the switches have been thrown. The program is live. And it's Thursday. That means it's Thorn in the side Thursday. Yes. Yes, it is. This is The Horn. If you want to be part of the live multimedia real-time madcap zany extravaganza, run on over to headonradionetwork.com and click on chat room. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump in where you will be met by the likes of Devin and Laborman and Little Gray and Mr. Gibson and Nighthawk and Soapbox Geezer and Tim from L.A. and Trey, and yes, yes, longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who being a third stage guild navigator has folded space to become Man Cave. Yes, yes, the spice is real. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And I will note early on that this is a listener-supported operation, and, well, we're kind of up against it. We have $320 to go this evening to beat the Swede in March. We beat the Swede in January. That meant a $50 bonus courtesy of our buddy Scott. We beat the Swede in February. That meant a $60 bonus via our buddy Scott. If we beat the Swede in March, it'll be a $70 bonus, an $80 bonus if we beat the Swede in April. But right now, beating the Swede in March is looking, well, it's looking kind of tough. $320 is what we've got to raise this evening. That's 10 people at $32, 32 people at $10, 64 people at $5. Yes, one person at $320. Two people at 160, four at 80, eight at 40, 16 at 20, and there we are. 32 at 10, yeah, 64 at 5, and 128 at $2.50, 256 at a buck and a quarter. We don't get the we don't get those kind of numbers very often where I get to use the easily gazented numbers, but that's where we are. If we want to keep the ball rolling with the Beat the Swede challenge here in 2016, we got to raise $320 this evening. And given the bit of a struggle that it's been, I'd say it's pretty exciting that we're only $320 away from accomplishing this. Yes, Devin, yes. He who controls the spice controls the universe. Precisely, precisely. So, Thorn in the Side Thursday, right? Right. What does that mean for us? Well, that means that we've got another opportunity to celebrate some real fun out there. How about Pittsburgh? We don't often do a Pittsburgh story, do we? No, we don't. But in but there's a bit of a controversy brewing in Pittsburgh because one of their award-winning television journalists with WTAE TV, Wendy Bell, who has been with them for 18 years, has been sacked. And there is much outrage. Apparently, Wendy Bell and social media, sometimes it's not your friend. Wendy Bell got fired after a long and distinguished career at WTA-TV. So there was a mass shooting, you know, because America, in Wilkinsburg, PA, on March the 9th. It was, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reported it this way. Authorities mum on investigation into Wilkinsburg killings. Investigators continued to conduct interviews Friday in the investigation of the ambush slaying of five people and an unborn child at a backyard cookout in Wilkinsburg, but authorities refused to say whether any progress had been made. At a short press briefing Friday afternoon, I mean, you kind of need the background on this, because this is a thorn in the side. At a short press briefing Friday afternoon, Allegheny County Police Lieutenant Andrew Sherman would say only that at this point the investigation is very active and ongoing. Allegheny County District Attorney Stephen A. Zappala Jr., during a visit to the Franklin Avenue crime scene Thursday, had indicated that Lamont Powell, one of the three people wounded in the shooting, may have been a target, but police would not expound on that possibility. Detectives have a number of theories they are working with. However, such a theory would do little to explain the indiscriminate shooting and killing of the other victims. Okay, so, you know, there's not a lot of concrete facts going on here. As is so often the case with a mass shooting in Merca. Wait a minute. The greatest country in the world on earth, now, today, forever, in the universe, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Amen. The details are not easily apprehended at the beginning of one of these things. Andrew Goldstein and Madison Chibiniak of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette describe it this way. The close-to-the-vest approach is in line with a strategy that law enforcement agencies mapped out the day after the shootings. We have some names that we're working on, but we don't want to put it out there because we want to get a hold of the people that we're looking for without them knowing we're looking for them. This is called police work. Yes. He refused to say whether police were looking for anyone described as a person of interest. There's some that we're more interested in than others. And then they issued a press release back early in the month saying, if there's a major development, a press conference will be held. At this point in the investigation, there is no new information being released. Further, the department will not be commenting on the many rumors and or theories circulating. The assailants used a .40 caliber handgun and an assault-style rifle, but no weapons have been found. Because Merca. Those killed in the assault were siblings Jerry Michael Shelton, 35, Brittany Powell, 27, and Chinetta Powell, 25, and their cousins Tina Shelton, 37, and Shada Mahone, 26. Chinetta Powell was 8 months pregnant. A tip line has netted several calls. The ATF's offering $20,000 reward. Lighthouse Cathedral pastor Maurice Trent, spokesman for the victim's family, said Friday he did not know whether Mr. Powell had been able to talk to investigators. He says the family's staying strong for the sake of the grandchildren. Allegheny County said any further information released will depend on how the investigation moves forward. And there's just not a lot more there. There's an account of a woman walking into the backyard where the shooting took place, because Merca, and said, "Why would you do this? Why would you do this?" She screamed at no one in particular before coming back around the house and breaking down in tears on the front steps at the memorial. Okay? There's not a blessed thing, okay? Not a blessed thing in that story about, to use the common parlance, whodunit. Yeah. Well, enter Wendy Bell, award-winning journalist for WTAE-TV. Who is now apparently unemployed. Why? Because when there were no arrests forthcoming, Wendy Sherlock Holmes Bell took to social media to write, "You needn't be a criminal profiler to draw a mental sketch of the killers who broke so many hearts 2 weeks ago Wednesday. They are young black men, likely in their teens or early 20s. They have multiple siblings from multiple fathers, and their mothers work multiple jobs." And then she went on to write favorably about a young African-American man, a worker that she saw one day in a restaurant, and she said she called over the manager and praised the young man and said, "I wonder how long it had been since someone told him he was special." Then she realized she'd really, really, really kind of fucked up. Later on, she posted the following. "I now understand that some of the words I chose were insensitive and could be viewed as racist. I regret offending anyone. I'm truly sorry." At least she got to the "I'm truly sorry," and she didn't say, "I'm sorry if anyone was offended by the truth I spoke," or any of the typical non-apology language so often to be found these days. But bear in mind, I mean, because I shared with you the story. I didn't leave anything out. I didn't leave out the secret part about how young black men in their teens or 20s by several different fathers committed the mass killing. I didn't leave that out because it wasn't there to leave out. That just happened to occur to award-winning telejournalist Wendy Bell, formerly of WTAE-TV in Pittsburgh. So, there's a bit of a controversy brewing in Pittsburgh. People who haven't the first freaking foggy idea of what the First Amendment is about are now screaming that Wendy Bell, whom I wouldn't know her from Sally Bell or Valley Bell or Liberty Bell. Sit, Liberty, sit. But they're screeching that her First Amendment rights have been violated. When, of course, they have, you know, not. The First Amendment, let us remember, stands as a bulwark against the government quashing speech. Until such time, however, as WTAA-TV Pittsburgh, owned by Hearst Broadcasting, becomes the government, Carl's Jr., there's no First Amendment implication here. Now, by way of excuse, Ms. Bell says that she was just wrought. She said, "What matters is what's going on. It makes me sick." The Associated Press reached out to her, and she took the call. "It makes me sick," she said. "What matters is what's going on in America, and it is the death of black people in this country. I live next to three war-torn communities in the city of Pittsburgh that I love dearly. My stories, they struck a nerve. They touched people, but it's not enough. More needs to be done. The problem needs to be addressed." Well, ma'am, I think the police are trying to address the problem. There are no allegations here that the police did the killing. They're trying to find the people who did. With an easily obtained semi-automatic assault rifle and an even probably more easily obtained 40 caliber handgun. Now, apparently, if you want to stand up in support of Wendy Bell, who charges and convicts two young black men in their teens or 20s with multiple fathers, I'm still working on the multiple fathers part personally. You can use the hashtag Pink Slips Matter. I know. Multiple fathers. Oh, they have they have multiple siblings from multiple fathers, and their mothers work multiple jobs. They're multipliers. That's kind of like ciphering. In her award-winning reporting, among her favorite phrases were, "Two black men are being sought." But, yeah, people are up there in Pittsburgh, people are, "Yeah, I'll never watch that WTAE-TV Pittsburgh no more. No, never. No. You guys want to go down to Eaton Park and get some gravy fries?" So, I mean, not earth-shattering, not really any particular big deal, but certainly, you know, there, definitely a story. It definitely a story. And there's more than a little bit because among other things, apparently WTAE did cover Bernie Sanders' appearance in Pittsburgh today. That's a good thing. Oh, and something else. Just something to mention relative to Bernie Sanders. You know, there's a great big shitstorm out there ever since Susan Sarandon went on All In with Chris Hayes and said that she wasn't necessarily prepared to just default vote for Hillary Clinton if Bernie is not the nominee. And she kind of waffled around about whether or not she would ever vote for Trump, and bless his heart, I like Chris Hayes a lot. He's a smart, smart young man. Well, young man to me. And she said, you know, Trump could get elected and just bring the revolution immediately. To which Chris responded, if you watch the tape, he said, "Tape? There's no tape." To which Chris Hayes responded, "Ah, you mean the Leninist model." And I'm pretty sure Susan Sarandon didn't know what he meant by the Leninist model. Leninist model? I didn't know any of John's wives were models. But whatever. But, you know, that idea of just, you know, bring the whole collapse right now, have done with it. And there are people who are down with that. I'm not, but there are people who are. Because a revolution is an ugly thing. What? I said a revolution is an ugly thing. Yeah. But she said that, and that has, of course, created a media firestorm in which there is now a trending trope in which all those misogynistic Bernie bros are refusing to vote for Hillary and will hand the election to Trump if Bernie is not the nominee. You heard it here first. There's only one thing, and they point to survey data. And you know what? The survey data does say that, like, a third of the Bernie supporters surveyed said that, yeah, if Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton was the nominee, that they were not going to vote for her. Which, of course, sent people like, whom I ordinarily respect, but, the, you know, campaign seasons are ugly things, Charles Blow at the New York Times into a stuttering hissy. Well, it's the height of ignorance for someone who supports Bernie Sanders to say that. They come for our frisbees and our wheat checks, and I don't normally use that man's name in my column, but you can go read it for yourself. And remember, of course, that the New York Times, weeks ago now, in a moment of, stunning lack of insight, or not, I mean, when you consider if you get up into the thin oxygen at the New York Times, you are not eating beans. No, sir. No, sir. You're up there in that economic echelon where the Hillary bills of the world kind of move around. And so the editorial board of the New York Times endorsed Bernie Sanders, having long been in the tank for Hillary Clinton before that. And then in the following weeks, they've sort of doubled down. And so today you get Charles M. Blow sputtering about how awful it would be if Hillary's the nominee and Bernie supporters don't just by God get in line and do what they're told to do and vote for Hillary. Now, the usual disclaimer: come November, if she's the nominee, I'm going to vote for her. And I will be compromising some rather significant values to do so. Yes. Because it will mean voting for someone who still supports the poisoning of my community, my state, and my region. It's just a fact. And no one's really gotten around, and I don't know why, but no one's gotten around to being able to ask Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton if she still supports mountaintop removal, so we're left to kind of presume that she does based upon what she said back in 2008, and that was that us hillbillies had to be practical about this. Us hillbillies, I'm sorry, have to be practical about being poisoned. We have to be practical about having massively higher percentages of birth defects in Appalachian areas near mountaintop removal sites than other parts of Appalachia and, in fact, other parts of the United States. We have to be practical about this. We've got to have some babies. You're going to have some birth defect babies if you want the coal barons and their Wall Street enablers to be able to live the lives to which they have become accustomed. Now, come May, I'm going to vote for Bernie Sanders in the primary. And I am hoping against hope, with all of my fevered being, that Bernie Sanders is the nominee of the Democratic Party. But if he's not, I'm going to take one for the team. Actually, I'm not going to take one for the team so much as I'm going to ask a whole bunch of random and unnamed and unknown hillbillies to take one for the team, in the form of lung disease and heart disease and brain disease and cancers of the genitourinary tract and you know, brain cancers. And right, I'm going to ask them to take one for the team so that we can just make sure that we keep Donald Trump out of the White House. Okay? So, you know, the caveat applies. If she's the nominee, I'm going to vote for her. But here's the interesting part about Charles Blow's column. It was, what's the word? Dishonest. It was dishonest. Why do I say that? Because the survey data upon which he relied, as it turns out, the survey data upon which he relied that says that, well, fully a third of Bernie supporters say they will not vote for Hillary if Hillary is the nominee. Oopsie, Charles, Mr. Blow. It turns out that in that same survey, they asked Hillary supporters if they would vote for Bernie, and more Hillary supporters said they would not vote for Bernie if he was the nominee than Bernie supporters said they wouldn't vote for Hillary. Damn it! I hate it when the for-profit media get caught dummying up the facts. So why does that turn into a story about the goddamn Bernie supporters who won't support Hillary, when the real story buried down in the damn data is about the Hillary supporters who say there's never, ever going to vote for Bernie Sanders and let it all burn down if we can't have Hillary and Trump can be president? Why isn't the story about that? Or why can't we have a little bit of the typical, you know, both sides do it false equivalencism? Why can't we have any of that? Both sides need to stop saying that. Both sides need to be willing to support the Democratic nominee to prevent America from falling all to pieces and us losing our frisbees and wheat checks if Donald Trump, or God forbid, because we need the God forbid Ted Cruz part in there too, because that evil little prick is out there skulking around and doing God knows what to somebody's daughter somewhere right now. Yeah. So I'm sure almost all of us have seen the I'm sure all of us have by now seen the Susan Sarandon stories and whatnot, and the just spastic outrage that it engendered. But just remember, it appears that statistically, for every Bernie supporter who says that she won't support Hillary, there are actually more Hillary supporters who say they won't support Bernie. And it's also worth remembering that back in 2008, when it was all over but the shouting, millions of Hillary supporters are saying the same thing about Barack Obama. I'll never vote for that one. Well, okay, to be fair, it was later on when bomber John McCain coined the phrase, that one, to describe Barack Obama. So I just wanted to give you a little bit of intellectual space in which to exist, shall we say, in the event that that someone it brings up the whole Bernie bros are going to screw America thing. For instance, there is an individual out there who will remain nameless. Most of you probably know who this person is. And to the extent that most of you, some of you are frustrated and disappointed in me for saying that I will vote for Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton if she's the nominee. Well, I say that a lot because I'm approaching this contest from my own particularized perspective. I don't like the name calling. I don't like that level of nastiness in this case because I don't like for Bernie supporters to open themselves to the howling charges of misogyny and sexism that will naturally come from it. So I'm pretty intent on critiquing Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton from a policy perspective and challenges to her really bad, awful, no good, terrible judgment. So I don't like the names, the cutesy names or any of that. I don't like that. But I do say here and elsewhere, if she's the nominee, I'll vote for her. Because I'm sticking to something that goes back to before Bernie even announced. I mean, Boss Man Wayne and I actually sat down and had a conversation about this. And he said, look, I want Bernie. I want Bernie more than I've wanted any candidate in my entire life. And I don't think I'm misrepresenting anything that Boss Man Wayne said. And he said, but it's going to be an uphill battle, and we know it. And if he doesn't win the nomination and Hillary does, I'm going to vote for Hillary. And I said, okay, then let us be of one mind on this, so that we can say that there's a that there's consensus within the. The upper rankings of the horn or whatever. And he said, yeah. And I said, okay. On the other hand, however, while I have said that, if I haven't said it 100 times, I'd be surprised. If I haven't said that 100 times since December, I'd be surprised. But on the other hand, interestingly, and sort of giving validity to the statistical issue that I have mentioned that sort of makes Charles Blow's column fall on its face, there's another individual who ostensibly has pretty serious progressive street cred, whom I have personally asked no less than probably a dozen times, if Bernie is the nominee, will you vote for him? And this person has still never answered that question at all. Which cannot help but make one wonder. On the other hand, Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, says, you know why I won't say I'm voting for her at this moment? Because it gives her permission for her to continue her casual relationship with the truth and to ignore huge swaths of America. I understand that. But I also, I'm guessing, Carol, that none of the big polling agencies have been calling your home either. They certainly haven't called mine. And I think we all remember back when, back in 2000 when, and Charles Blow brought this up in the context too. I didn't much appreciate a comparison between George W. Bush and Bernie Sanders, I got to tell you. But he said, you know, remember back in 2000 when Ralph Nader was running around saying there's not a dime's worth of difference between Al Gore and George W. Bush? How did that work out? And I have made that reference in the past myself, but I never did it by tacitly comparing George W. Bush and Bernie Sanders. And this again is one of the nastier aspects of the full-on conflict. The full-on sleaze fest being run by the New York Times. Remember, and you know, I don't know how Mr. Blow. I don't know how he has the nerve to write that when his own newspaper got caught red-handed. Murkying up a story that was initially a positive story about Bernie Sanders, but when the pressure got put on the paper from probably you know who, that suddenly it turned into a negative. That takes some noive. The noive. It does indeed. So that's just something out there for your consideration. But I did want to make sure that you knew that you knew that there was more to that statistical study about Bernie voters not voting for Hillary than was being reported. And of course, I mean, look, emotions run high in campaign years. There's no getting around it. And they always have. They come to blows to sometimes. Like there are accounts of brawls that became downright riotous during polling in the frontier days when the frontier was, you know, Kentucky. People womping and stabbing and cutting and punching and whatnot each other over their preferred candidates. Usually liquor was involved. The founding fathers, such as they were rather notorious for the scurrilous things that they said about each other, and back then were prone to find themselves on the field of honor over some of those tawdry things, and it cost more than one wagging tongue his life. And so anybody who reaches for the smelling salts and clutches his or her pearls at the cheapening of discourse and the lack of civility during this particular campaign. It really needs to never stray more than you know, a couple of inches from the fainting couch. American politics is ugly, and it has always been ugly. And there are times when American politics have been manifestly more ugly. Consider the nasty shit that was said about the genocidalist Andrew Jackson's wife, Rachel. Consider the near... The near rebellion that took place in his own cabinet over one cabinet member's wife. I'm just trying to provide a little bit of perspective. And if one wishes to remain in the Democratic Party, and you know what? I hope, this is a fervent hope of mine. Man, I'm just editorializing the hell. Not a lot of news going on here. It is my fervent hope that the young people who have seen fit to join Bernie's cause, and for whom I have a tremendous amount of respect, and to whom I will, in fact, in many instances, defer, because it is their world that my generation is screwing up, and the generation beyond me has screwed up. Let's be clear, and I realize we're doing a little bit of speculating here. This election would not be a challenge for my parents' generation. This election would be a laugh for my mother and father, born respectively in 1925 and 1924. In point of fact, this would have been this would have been today my mother's 91st birthday. 19 years that she's been gone. But this election would have been easy for her. And it would have been easy for my father. And I suspect it would have been easy for a whole lot of that generation of West Virginians and Americans. They would have looked at Bernie Sanders and said, What a remarkable heir to the legacy of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who saved our lives. And they would have looked and said, because I just don't think that Republican Mrs. Clinton is going to do what we need done. Because you see, in the politics of the past, and I don't care how many Hilarians screech at the idea of me referring to her as a Republican, before the so-called New Democrats got hold of the Democratic Party in the 1990s, the policies that both Bill and Hillary Clinton espouse were the policies of a moderate Republican Party. Okay? They just were. And so my parents' generation, the generation that, you know, won World War II and all of that, It would have delivered this country for Bernie Sanders in a heartbeat. And if there is one message that I think is missing from Bernie's stump speech, is that nothing that he's talking about in terms of his revolution is new or out of the ordinary within the broader context of classical Democratic Party politics. Bernie Sanders is an FDR Democrat. The fact that he is out of step with the mainstream of the Democratic Party, or perceived to be, or claimed to be, has much more to do with that Democratic Party than with Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is completely in line with the Democratic Party politics of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. And Lyndon Baines Johnson without the nastiness. Bernie Sanders is heir politically to the legacy of Robert Francis Kennedy. He embodies he embodies the goals and ideals of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And my parents' generation could have seen this in a moment. But it is the doom of men that they forget. And women. Because among the things that we have lost in the generation since Ronnie Reagan entered the government, we have lost the ability to dream. We have lost the ability to want better. We have lost the ability to even imagine that the United States of America can be more than what it is, that the United States of America, we the people, constantly working on that more perfect union, trying to achieve domestic tranquility. That we do not have to accept the status quo. And a lot of this was accomplished, I think, by virtue of the fact that people took a look at the hiding that George McGovern took in 1972 at the hands of Richard M. Nixon and said, well, never again. We're not going to be a bunch of damn peaceniks anymore. And we're not going to talk about social policies and expanding the social welfare state. We're going to be more like Republicans because winning is more important than having principles. And so, by the early 1990s, behold, William Jefferson Clinton. But to my way of thinking, even that analysis relative to George McGovern is flawed. Because, yes, George McGovern took a hiding. George McGovern got stomped. But he got stomped by a political machine that was illegal from jump. Those rotten, scurrilous, scurvy bastards in the Nixon administration couldn't put on slip-on shoes without committing a felony. But we don't seem to remember that, just like we don't seem to remember that the last time in this country that a family was able to survive on a single income, and that a majority of American families did so, was the Jimmy Carter administration. Now, if you say Jimmy Carter around your average upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Republican, they will spit on the ground at the mere mention of that Baptist Sunday school teacher's name. But the fact remains that what remained of the FDR middle class 20th century American dream died. After a host of dirty tricks with the arrival of the Reagan administration. And I say all of that because I said initially that I fervently hope that the young people, the hope of this nation, who have perhaps for the first time taken an interest in politics with Bernie's campaign, I hope they will come into the Democratic Party, and I hope they will stay in the Democratic Party, and I hope they will raise 962,312.8 shades of unholy hell to fix the Democratic Party. Because there are things that have to go in terms of a party who uses the term democratic in its name. And the first thing that has to go is the goddamn superdelegates. Never should have been in there in the first place. They were put in there as a means of making sure that the hoi polloi could never put a populist candidate forward, that there would always be a machine Democrat to win in the end. And if times really have changed, then it's damned well time for the superdelegates to go. Let me give you an example. Alaska has a superdelegate by the name of Kim Metcalf. I'm not sure why she's a superdelegate, but she is. I mean, there are rules governing who gets to be a superdelegate, you know. You have to get a tattoo on your ass and stuff like that. But Kim Metcalf is a superdelegate from Alaska. In Alaska, 81.6% of the Democrats participating in its caucus chose Bernie Sanders over Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton. Now, part of the Clinton inevitability strategy was to get all the superdelegates to declare their intent to vote for Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton, thereby making it look like making it look as if Bernie Sanders didn't have a chance. And the superdelegates did as they were told for a variety of reasons. Some, you know, some have been in the party long enough that they're dear friends of the Clintons. You know, they've swanned and soireed and hobnobbed and glad-handed and hail fellow well-metted and whatever. And, well, this is an excellent example. So, a young man, a recent graduate in political science, from college, young man by the name of Levi Younger from Eagle River, Alaska, went to the caucuses, and along with thousands of other Alaskans, expressed to the tune of 81.6% the preference of Democrats in Alaska that Bernie Sanders be the nominee of the Democratic Party in the presidential election of November 2016. When the numbers came in, Levi Younger contacted Kim Metcalf because she had said she is a committed superdelegate, which of course is not true. Superdelegates are not committed. They are not counted. But she'd said she's a Hillary superdelegate from Alaska. And Levi Younger said, in contacting her on Facebook, said, "While I understand your personal preferences would naturally come first, you are a human after all, and conversations with Bernie supporters, not the man himself, would possibly leave a bad taste in your mouth. Son, never give up points that you never concede points that haven't been challenged." Oops, I think I just geezer-splained. "I believe that the people's vote should probably have heavier precedent, unless you were implying that it's we who are in charge of who you vote for, but rather someone, something else. Sanders will only be our nominee if those we've chosen to represent us do exactly that." To which Kim Metcalf replied, "Again, negative conversations about our candidates do nothing to further Sanders' cause." Levi Younger says, "I'm not sure how negative it is to question your voting discretion in spite of overwhelming support. If critiquing Hillary or your apprehension to accurately vote for those you represent is negative, then I'm not sure that you're the one I'd like representing me." She then said, "Where do you live?" He told her. And he said, why would you cast your superdelegate vote for Hillary Clinton when you see what the will of the people of Alaska is?" And Kim Metcalf responded, "Because I believe Hillary Clinton would be a better president. End of conversation." And Levi Younger said, "And that's why people get angry. Bernie supporters can be quite vapid, but voting in opposition to what we voted for is only supporting the idea that Hillary and her supporting superdelegates are in the pockets of others. Bernie won Alaska. End of story. Your personal preferences for president are represented in your vote as a citizen, not as a representative of your state." At which point, Kim Metcalf began to get nasty, as Hillary's supporters often do. "I'm in the pocket of no one," she said. "I have no financial connections to Hillary Clinton or any other Democrat. I am a retired union representative. I put in my time in the trenches for 40 years, and I really object to someone like you who has probably done nothing except caucus telling me what to do. I am voting for the best interests of my country, and that would be Hillary Clinton." See, no, that's what you get to do in the voting booth. That's what you get to do at the caucus. And yes, under the rules, superdelegates are free to vote their conscience. But, oh my God. Can you imagine? And this goes back to Charles Blow's column. This election is, this primary season is far closer than the for-profit media are letting on. Now, the gap may widen depending on what happens in places like New York. Polling right now indicates that Bernie is out front in Wisconsin, that there yet remains some perhaps more than remnant of that state's proud progressive tradition. He's up by 4 or 5 points. It's probably very near the margin of error. It's probably a dead heat. He is said to be up among the voters who are people of color in Wisconsin. But can you imagine going into the Democratic convention in Philadelphia, where, with any luck at all, there will be no guns allowed? The Secret Service has certainly said that about Cleveland. We don't care how, the Secret Service has said, we do not care how many of you evangelical gun-demetalist ammosexuals holler that we need to allow guns in the Republican National Convention. We're not going to do it, and you can't make us. To which the evangelical gun-demetalist ammosexuals replied,
Wolverines, please.
Right. So maybe they'll just keep their guns outside the convention. One never knows. But anyway, wouldn't it be something to have two candidates within, say, 100 delegates of each other, or less, or in a best-case scenario, to go into the convention with Bernie actually leading in delegates? You know, let's say the people of California say, no, we're feeling the burn for any number of reasons, climate change being one. His climate change policy, his seriousness about climate change, not an incrementalist approach, or the fact that he thinks that cannabis should be legalized. And let's say that, okay, here, Bernie goes into the convention with one more pledged delegate than Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton. One more. And the superdelegates throw the nomination to Hillary Clinton. Now, under a situation like that, would Charles Blow have the people who had just been disenfranchised, should they just say, oh, well, we've been disenfranchised, I guess we're going to go and vote for Hillary? Now again, I freely acknowledge that I'm engaging in the rankest speculation. But this is turning into a bizarre year. And if you want to know just how corrupt the superdelegate system is, ponder this. The Republican Party is sitting there in their little meetings going, God damn, I wish we had some superdelegates. We wouldn't even be worrying about Trump. We'd just anoint John Kasich or Willard Romney or, oh God, the Rafaelito Cruz. Oh, please, no, Jesus, no. And be done with it. Because that superdelegate system, that just rigs the whole game. That's a break on the roulette wheel. That's a deck full of aces. All at the bottom. Sure wish we had some of those superdelegates. So that's one of those things that has to be fixed. The superdelegates have to be gotten rid of if we are going to pretend at all that there is any little d democracy in the big D Democratic Party. Levi Younger went on and told Kim Metcalf, You're not making a concerted effort to vote for the public. I am the public. Everyone who did nothing but caucus did exactly like we should. We voted. You, ma'am, are the one who is missing the point. You said it yourself. You're voting for interests. But they're not mine, not the rest of the what, 75% of the state who opposed the establishment 40 years ago, 40-year Democratic veterans, content with the status quo and their choice for us. Kim Metcalf just responded,
"You know it all."
Eventually, Kim Metcalf tells Levi Younger, if you want to change the way the Democratic Party works, you should get involved and work to change the party from the inside. And then, of course, it devolved into this. Levi Younger says, "Thank you for your time, Kim. You're stealing this for Hillary, and you're rubbing it in all of our faces. If you find these comments negative, it's because what you're doing is wrong. As a citizen, you get to vote for your choice. As a rep, you vote for us. In the end, we'll hold you accountable." And she says, "Sure. You'll be involved after the election?" Levi Younger says, "You better believe it now. Having someone tell you your vote doesn't matter is enough to incite a riot." And she says,
"Now you're talking like Donald Trump."
But there won't be a riot. No, it won't incite a riot. No. It'll just cost the Democratic Party an election. Because now if she wins it fair and square on pledged delegates, fine. And I go forward and I do what I've been saying all along. I vote for her. But if by some miracle, I guess, it becomes clear that Bernie Sanders should be the nominee, and he is not, again, fair and square, it'll be a stolen nomination if it is a nomination that is selected by the superdelegates. Under the subject line, rankest speculation, Steve in New York writes, "Maybe you are engaging in the rankest speculation. However, these are things necessary to consider because they just might happen. After all, would you have thought a year and a half ago a self-described socialist would be winning states?" Oh, well played. Well played, Steve. Well played indeed. Under the subject line, Bill and the Bushes, our buddy Ron in Raleigh writes, "I was listening to the Stephanie Miller show today, and a caller mentioned how close Bill Clinton and the Bush family have become. Stephanie proceeded to pitch a hobo bitch, insisting that Bill and George et al. Are only doing humanitarian work together and that they're not close personal friends. It doesn't take much effort to find articles on the friendship between the Clintons and the Bushes. When you love someone, it's hard to see their flaws." Oh, yeah. Wasn't there even that joke about how Bill was the Bush son that George H.W. always wanted? Yeah. So, we're pretty near to the end of the filibobster, 9 minutes past the hour. And I am happy to report that what seemed an insurmountable goal has become significantly less so. Thank you very kindly to Linda and to Daniel. We have now only $170 to go to finish March okay and beat the Swede for the third month in a row. And believe you me, our buddy Scott in Sweden wants to be beaten. Yeah. $170 to go, 10 people at 17 people at 10. One at 170. Two at 85, four at 42.50, 28 at 21 and a quarter, right? Am I right, something like that? I'm sketchy on the math. That's why the delegate business is such a problem for me. But just a little food for thought, and there's plenty of other stuff to talk about. And if there's something you want to talk about, well, you know how to do it. The Stress Line, named in memory of the immortal Bill Mr. Stress Miller, is 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. And the other line is 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. Of course, via Skype, from anywhere on the planet, you can reach the program via Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. There are many, many ways to participate in the conversation, and you are invited to use them as you see fit. It's 12 minutes past the hour. Yes, we have the Green News Report coming up. Brad Friedman, Desi Doyen. I look forward to that every Tuesday and Thursday, and I don't exactly know why we didn't have it on Tuesday, but we've got it today, so that's a good thing. Oh, come on now, tired old computer. Work with me here.
Working.
Ah, there we go, there we go, there we go. Slowly working. Waiting for, waiting. Come on, we got this. We can do this. Oh, for pity's sakes. Trying to get at something in my Facebook Messenger, and it's not being at all cooperative. Just trying and trying and trying. Well, maybe we'll get there. Come on. All right. Jesus God. This is a This went out today at about 11:23 a.m. From 350 Action. Okay, that's a real Twitter feed. 350 Action. Breaking: Hillary Clinton is so sick of allegations that she takes fossil fuel money. You got that?
Yes, I do not. I have money for people who work for
I guess that young woman will know better than to ever go to a political rally and ask a question of a political candidate, because Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton is so sick of the Sanders campaign lying about her. Well, there's only one problem. The Sanders campaign isn't lying about her. She had a fundraiser in Pennsylvania, what, a week, 2 weeks ago, that was put together by a lobbyist for the fracking industry? Yeah, oopsie. Yeah. All right. Break time. This is the horn. Oh, wait. Courtesy of Bob in Texas. Bob. A $100 dollar-for-dollar matching challenge right now at 7:17 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Thank you, Bob. So every dollar gets matched by Bob up to the next $100, which will beat the Swede. If we do that, the Swede will be beaten. It's on the table right now, and it'll get us over the top. Thank you so much, Bob. Thank you so much indeed.
nothing more to say. Very superstitious now, babe. Devil's on his way. 13-month-old baby. But I'm broken again. I'm in the way.
From the album Killin' Time, that is the Di Pritchard Band from Australia, featuring our very own John Fox on drums and Superstitious. Listen, I hate to keep anybody waiting, so we'll hold off on the Green News Report till maybe later in the program or something. But let's go over to the phone and see who's calling in from the LA area code. Hello.
Hey, Bob.
Well, Tracy, what's happening?
Not a whole hell of a lot. How you doing?
You know what? It was just a lovely day here. Spring is springing. There's guys standing on the side of the road here now, Tracy, and they got handmade cardboard signs that say one word, and it says ramps, and you know that spring has come.
Ramps.
Okay.
Ramps.
Yeah.
If I
wouldn't get busted by the postal inspector, I'd send you some.
Okay. So what are ramps? What are they?
Well, the word ramps comes from the old English or old Welsh word for garlic. And that word is ramsech. And that's okay. Where we also get the name Ramsay. And I got some Ramsays in my background. But it's a kind of a broad-leafed wild leek. And they are strong. Oh my God, they're strong. They put garlic. Garlic runs and hides from ramps.
Oh shit!
But if you wash them real good and you trim them up and you fry them up in a skillet with some bacon grease and some fried potatoes, oh!
Oh, we're already studying it on the food porn, Bib. Huh?
Yes, we are. To make an omelet and season it with ramps, oh, jump back.
Yep, makes you want to slap your mama, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, that's, you know, I love, you know, me and food. Well, you know, I sent you the picture of the mac and cheese. I know that was kind of cruel.
Yeah, well, but... yeah, I've been watching the mail every day.
I told Jan, it's so funny because I went online and I looked to see, I said, you know what, the next time I decide to make a batch of mac and cheese, I will have to do that because, you know, we're getting ready to move. And we should be in our new place on the 28th of this month. Well, next month, rather. And it's just been crazy stressful. You know, I haven't moved in over 20 years. And so it's just been an enormous amount of stress, and then we found out that Jan is going to have hip replacement surgery.
Oh!
That's what I get to marry. Yeah, see, that's what I get to marry an old woman. See that?
I take it Jan is not within earshot?
No, I say it to her face all the time.
But she just doesn't happen to be there now.
No, she's at home. I'm in the car sitting, waiting for, in line to get my this cat wash. But I keep, because she's been, you know, been particularly whiny. I mean, and so I told her.
Jesus, I'm glad she doesn't listen to this program.
I told her, and I said, if you keep it up, I'm going to put you in a home.
Oh!
like, I told her that for better or for worse shit, no. When you show your ass, I'm not going to do it. I have compassion. I am.
Yeah, I know. It's like that till death do we part language. That does not have to happen serendipitously, or it doesn't have to happen by natural causes. Right, I get it. I've been reminded of that right. From time to time.
Exactly. And so she's gotten particularly whiny, so I'm trying to not be so mean, but it's just not in my nature not to be. But so I told her the other day, I said, you know, as much as I love you, you're really tap dancing on my nerves with high heel shoes. You have to stop it. I grew up and I have been incredibly independent and very much so taking care of people. And I've always done that and I understand. But there comes a time when you're just like, oh, Jesus fucking Christ. Again, I guess I just don't understand that over needy thing because I've never been overly needy. So, yeah, that's me. I'm terrible. But I'm willing to get her a really good nurse. I'm sorry.
Well, damn.
I know.
the last time that I was reminded that that till death do we part thing didn't have to be, natural causes, it was preceded by the words, "You have to sleep sometime."
Yeah. At some point, you gotta close your eyes. Oh God, that's so true. And like I told you, I tell Jen, I'm like, I'm working on it, baby. I think a lot of it has to do with the stress that I'm under with the move and this, and then listening to, the country falling into watching the country fall into a dung heap. It's just been kind of overwhelming. So much so, I have just decided because I'm taking a break from school. And it all started, long before the hip thing. I said, I'm just going to take a break, a quarter break or so, because, we're moving and I have to work and all that. And then we found out about Jen's surgery. And I'm like, okay, I really have to take a break because there's no way that I can work and do school and deal with a wife having to do rehabilitation and all that sort of stuff. Then it also made me think about the fact that I really think I'm going to really need to work during this election cycle because I'm not so much terrified anymore. I have resigned myself to the fact that, Donald Trump is going to be the candidate for the Republican Party, no matter what Kasich and the asshole Cruz does, no matter what they do. And it's just my hope that Bernie Sanders does become, the Democratic nominee, but like you said,
well,
earlier,
if for no other reason than he fares better in the polls than Hillary does.
Yes, he does. And see, this is like that story you were talking about in Alaska. 86%.
81.6.
I think there was a six in there somewhere. Of Alaskans said, "We want Bernie." And this bitch, what was her name?
Oh, Kim Metcalf.
Okay, Ms. Metcalf. See, what about the will of the people? And see, this is where I become troubled and upset. Because, I'm sorry, if I was an Alaskan, I would be hotter than fish grease.
Hotter than fish grease. Yes, I was waiting on. I was waiting on our first opportunity to use hot as fish grease.
Right. I would just be. I would be beyond done. It's like, wait. This is like the young man said. This is if you vote for Hillary Clinton, if you give your vote to Hillary Clinton as a superdelegate, then you... Hi.
Tell you something to somebody?
Yeah. Then you have just said, you know, given, you know, credence to that thing, well, your vote doesn't count. And that keeps people from voting. But when you do stuff like that, you just tell people, well, you know, your vote doesn't count because, hey, I've decided that no matter what the people of Alaska says, I voted for Hillary Clinton. Dr. whatever, Secretary, Miss former First Lady, Hillary Clinton. The same woman who at Nancy Reagan's funeral or whatever talked about how...
Yeah, that was just not going over real well, is it?
It's like, you know, and it's not, lest we forget, you know, bringing us black folks to heel. You know, and I was re-listening to that seminal little talk she did about, you know, super predators. And she's like, there was this part that she
Now, wait. I've read the articles now. I read the article over at Hillary Men. Damn it. She was talking about gang members, not Negroes.
Uh-huh. And was she so she was talking about those white gangs running around town?
Yeah, all of them. Yeah, the cripples and the sanguines.
Uh-huh. Mm. Well, my thing was when she says, "Well,
you know, you know how bad it is when a white gang goes wild down at the yacht club. You've never
yeah.
seen, yeah. See, you don't want to see that."
I don't want to see
I mean,
that.
I mean,
you know?
there's,
I don't want to see
there's
big,
there is perfectly good lead big crystal stemware left with spots on it.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to see Biff and Binky and all that and Buffy, you know,
Oh, I can always count on you, Tracy.
Deputants gone wild, you know. I, as the pearls are clutching. Being clutched. I am just so tired. But the one part that nobody that I don't know if anybody seized upon her little speech was I don't know why they are that way, but we won't deal with that. We don't even talk about why. She at that point she had a chance. She had a chance to say, you know what, this is the You know, why are they this way? Well, let me say, you know, I don't know, maybe because of the lack of opportunity, maybe because, you know, substandard education, housing, all these things that we can change as, you know, the Democratic Party. Now, this bitch calls us super predators and doesn't even go into why she, what she could do, what we could do as Americans to make it so they're not considered super predators or why they are super predators. There's a word for her.
Or even if there is such a thing.
Such a fucking thing.
Because we kind of blew past that because it was such an outrageous statement. We kind of blew past it and without going, wait a minute, where does that phrase even come from?
It come from the Republican Party. Oh, I'm sorry. Am I yelling?
No, that's okay. Feel free. I mean, we like for people to get emotionally healthy on the program.
You know, it's just when you sit back and listen to the bullshit, it's just scary. I was Monday morning or afternoon, rather. Jen and I were heading back from Harris Rencon. And we stopped at this place. It's kind of like a Marie Callender's kind of place. It's called Polly's. Great food, you know.
Mm.
You know, it's kind of like...
It's no Luby's, but, yeah.
It's kind of like I wish Cracker... It's kind of like the closest that I'm going to get to having a Cracker Barrel in California.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's kind of like that. So, anywho, and I wasn't feeling good. I stayed up too late Sunday night with going into Monday morning gambling. I won, but
oh.
I won. As a matter of fact, what was the pledge?
The challenge that was on the table was $100. I'm proud to announce the challenge. I'm proud to announce the challenge has been met. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Diane. Thank you, and thank you, Larry. It's huge. It's huge.
It's huge. Well, I'm going to throw another 50 out there.
Let's put it this way. The Swede is beaten. Now, that does not necessarily mean that the Swede does not need to also be thrashed.
Mark, okay. No, I just add $50 to that as well.
Okie doke.
So,
absolutely. Thank you very kindly, Tracy. I got to know where in what game did the goddess Fortuna favor you? Blackjack, craps?
Craps. I played craps for the first time, and see in California because I don't know what the rules are, but they use the dice, but they can't use the dice for the points. They have to turn the cards over. So basically, so set, they have it, you know, they have like, you know, two sets of cards. But,
well, you know, we have a craps expert in the Horn Family Community Congregation, and we will have to make inquiry. Carol, are you hearing me?
Apparently in California, we can't use the dice for the point. So they have two sets of cards, each for each die. And so it goes 1 to 6. And so when I toss the dice, so I get a 7. So they turn over the number 2 card and the number 7 card. And that's how they use the point. That's how they do that.
Yeah, I'm about halfway baffled by craps anyway, so...
I am still baffled, but you know what, Bob? I don't know what I did.
I don't know what I did, but they handed me money. Is that what it is?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was bored. I was doing considerably well this last trip. I mean, we left there with about $2,000. So, we're... Actually, now gives me now that now that pays for our appliances. See, so
including the oven of awesomeness.
Yes, the oven of awesomeness. Including the oven of awesomeness, my 3-in-1 oven, which will be delivered April 27th.
And you'll be able to, like, do 2 or 3 pans of macaroni and cheese at a time in that, right, Tracy?
Yes, yes. And this is what I was talking about. I was like, what I'll do, I'll have to christen the oven of awesomeness with, you know, macaroni and cheese for everyone. So, Jen and I, you know, like I said, I'm on no sleep, and I'm feeling nauseated, but she wanted to stop at Polly's because... they have the most incredible cinnamon rolls and all this. I'm like, okay, we'll stop. I just won't really eat anything. Then what happens? I'm already not feeling well. And I hear these people talking across from us. He's from a member of the Tea Party.
Oh, no.
And I just sat there. Jan was oblivious. And he didn't really talk a lot about anything in particular. He just said Tea Party. And I'm like, I told Jeff, you know, I have to go. I actually physically got even more ill and got up and went to the car. Because I just couldn't listen. I didn't want to hear it. Granted, we were in Norco, which is very, very conservative. So I'm like, I'm going to just sit this one out. It was going to be bad. He was talking about that. He was talking about right to life. And I'm just like, oh, God, I can't do this. I can't do it. Because the next thing he was going to talk about was sick. But what made me even more sick was the fact that there was a brother talking across from him. And I'm like, okay, I can't do it. It's bad enough to hear Tea Party people. But when one of them is black, I can't do it. Just can't do it. So yeah, I went ahead and laid it and left the room.
There's no reason if you sit there and listen to that garbage, and you've got a chance to get away, then in my book you're engaging in self abuse if you don't.
Right, and that's what you like. I said I had a chance, to get away. And I didn't want Jan to get a thick ass, not as, you know, as a screaming political as I am. And I didn't want her to get it. She gets upset about stuff when I do go off alone, people. And I'm like, So I went ahead and got up and went on about my business. But yeah, no, those are the parts of the country or the part of my state where I can't live. That's it. It's just certain things you can't do. And that was it. But other than that, yeah, so Jan and I, but here's the funny part. Now, I have been up all night. And then I looked at my clock, watch, it was almost 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, oh my God. And I know Jan was still asleep, so I'm trying to get some coffee. So I'm sitting at the, I was waiting for the coffee crinkles or to come by my slot machine. I said, well, let me just put the money in the slot machine and wait for the coffee, because Starbucks wasn't open yet. So I put the money in, and it's one of those damn penny machines where you're not really sure how much you're betting until you, I accidentally hit the max bet, which was $6, and I'm like, oh my God. But guess what? I hit the bonus.
Nice, I think.
Yes, because the bonus wound up being $500.
Run. Cash in, girlfriend.
That's exactly what I did. I was sitting there that weekend was one of those days. I was just getting like $200 jackpot.
So this was like jackpot. this was like one of those spinning games?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was
a lot of years ago now. God, it really, really was. We went to Vegas for 4 days for Netroots Nation, and all I ever did was walk through the casino. And I knew better than to do my best Dustin Hoffman impression at counting cards, definitely counting cards, because I knew that they'd show me the front door. That's my casino experience at the Rio in Las Vegas.
Oh, so you guys stayed at the Rio. Well, that's where Netroots Nation.
Yeah.
I went to Netroots Nation and was here in San Jose, and I was not so impressed. I was just like, because it was just the same people, you know, the upper, it was just those liberals that compete, the liberals that people talk about when they mention liberals. You know, the ones that think they know everything and everybody else is stupid.
Yeah.
And that's basically what I saw.
Yeah, we haven't been back to Netroots Nation since Minneapolis. When it got to where the sponsor, when the panels were sponsored by corporate America, you know, not so much.
Right. It's like we've lost something here. You know, and it doesn't take, I'm a quick, I'm slow sometimes in the uptake, but actually, you know, when there's certain things that it's like, it doesn't take much, but it's just when, like you said, when you have, stuff about global warming being sponsored by, you know, Exxon. I mean, I'm exaggerating, of course, but maybe not so much.
Oh, and by the way, you've got I just got a note from Tim. Tim says, Bob, since we beat the Swede, I'd like to do a challenge for Friday on the front porch. $69.73. And he says, and tell Tracy, howdy. He's trying to stay good with you in case the room ever opens up, even after the move.
Now we're moving into a three bedroom house. But the thing is that third bedroom is basically going to be my office.
Oh, and by the way, you got a note from Marty. Marty said, "Now wait just a centon from the old Battlestar Galactica series." I've never seen craps done that way. What casino are you talking about?
It's in California. It's here is Rincon. So any casino in California that has craps, that's how it's done. It's something to do with the Nevada thing. I don't know.
See, I thought you stood there with the dice and hollered about somebody needing shoes.
No, you do. You still do. You do shoot the dice. You do. That does not change. But like I said, you do not use the dice as your point. Whatever you roll, coincides with a card, not the actual die. So like I said, I roll a 2 and a 7 to turn over one card for the 2. I'm sorry, 2 and a 5. So you turn over one card for the 2 and one card for the 5. And then that'll show you whatever the number is. So it'll say the card that you turn over for the 2 is a 3. And then the card you turn over for the 5 is a 6. So the point
you know how me and mathematics get along. I mean,
it sounds to me that
I'd just be better off walking up with my $5 bill and handing it to the croupier and walking away.
And basically, that's what I did, to tell you the truth. But I walked away with $500, so I don't, like I said, I was like, wait. Because I was, you know, there was a couple of times where I got my ass handed to me, but it was fun. It was fun. I really enjoyed it. Now, then the whole time I was there, because I normally play 3-card poker, but because it was a holiday weekend, the table limits were higher, and I'm like, I'm not playing on these table limits, so I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to go ahead and play the slot machine. And that's how that happened. And then after the slot machine, that's when I went on, I was bored, and I went on to the, to play crap, but then I went to another slot machine and won another. So it's like, Dan was very happy. And she's not, you know, she doesn't get very happy very often when it comes to me and my gambling.
Damn, Tracy. Oh, you were asking about ramps. And you know, the conversations you and I get into, there's just something about them that makes other people just want to chime in. Ron and Raleigh, in regard to ramps, wanted you to know, as we say here in North Carolina, ramps are stronger than cat pee.
Oh.
And wow. I had never heard it put quite like that, but it is true. I mean, I had a note from Devin saying that I should get a food dehydrator and put some ramps in it and dry them out and crush them into a powder, and then I could send them to you that way. But then we both came to the agreement that the dehydrator would become a single use dehydrator, and the only way I'd ever get the smell out of my house was to burn the house down.
Oh, speaking of dehydrators, my oven, the oven of wonder.
Yes.
It's a dehydrator as well.
Now you're just rubbing it in. Now you're going to tell me it's got a vertical part where you can hang homemade sausages and smoke them.
No, but that's going to be the smoker that my wife is probably going to buy me.
Oh, but you know what? I saw one of those the other day. I was in one of those corporate big box hardware affairs.
Oh, yes.
And I saw an electric smoker. Damn thing weighed a ton. And it had this beautiful picture of it sitting there just smoking away with a couple of chickens and 4 or 5 racks of ribs and some sausages in it. Oh! But it did kind of violate my sensibilities. I like a smoker that you go out and you unfold your folding chair by and you get your fire going and you put your meat on and you get the temperature right and you got a cooler there next to you with several long frosty long neck things sticking up out a bunch of ice and rock salt for extra coldness and you do it that way.
Well, see, here's the next thing, because you know we are, like you said, spring is definitely sprung here as well. We get my car washed because it's been extra. We had that weird kind of quitting rain and now it looks like it's going to be done with the rain. So, okay, I'm going to go ahead and get the car washed. And I said it. I did say washed. Where that R comes from, maybe it's just because I talked to you, but I did say washed. But, so our next project is the backyard, because I have a backyard. And so I am excited because Janice and I have been looking at, you know, griddles. And so it's the raging, because we found one that is a combination propane and charcoal.
Well, now, see, I can see where the kind of smoker that I like would probably get me arrested in Southern California. being how there's, you know, fire involved and, you know, burning wood and sparks. And,
right.
Yeah.
And we have no, like, we have a fireplace. And so Jeff's like, you know, you're going to have to pay attention to, you know, we have actual days where there's no burn days where you can't burn wood. And I'm like, why do you have to pay attention to that? That's your job. You're the housewife.
Oh, wait a minute.
I said that.
You live dangerously.
I do. But
it's, so what is it, Tracy? I mean, it was all exciting to have a to have a lesbian wedding, and now you want to find out what a lesbian divorce is all about?
No, you know, but you know, the thing is, Jan is a housewife. She's all those things that I could never be. I mean, aside from, I'm a better cook than she is.
Needle points and crochets, doilies and that kind of thing, or?
No. That, no. But she is definitely, she's that person that keeps the house clean and makes sure that, you know, my shirts are pressed for work. What?
Oh, he keeps the house clean. Whoo!
Look,
I don't want that spare. I don't want the spare room.
No, but it's hilarious.
I don't want to be there when it gets going real good.
But it does. It does. But it's not about what I just said. It's about other stuff. And usually because I'm acting like a guy. It's usually because it's like I come home.
Wait. No. You are not acting like a guy. Until you get to the point where you're going, honey, have you seen my shoes?
I do that.
You've done that. Oh,
I've done that.
Oh, Tracy.
It's
Tracy.
Terrible. It is terrible. That's why I have to be so much nicer to her, because as much as she gets on my nerves, she puts up with me. Because I don't clean. I mean, I attempt it. Because what happened, whenever I would try to clean, she would come up behind me and do it over. And I'm like, then I can stop doing it. And so then she got mad because I stopped doing it. And I'm like, well, I understand now what my brothers and my other male friends were talking about with women versus certain things. Because I've never been allowed to be... I've never had that. I don't know. I don't know if I'm being sexist or what have you. I don't know if it's just me that I've never been allowed to not so much be pampered or I don't know what I'm trying to say, but.
Spoilt, and that's how you say it. Spoilt?
Spoilt.
Yeah, S-P-O-I-L-T. Spoilt?
Spoilt. I can't say it. It just won't let me do it. I can say worse, but I can't do spoiled.
Spoilt.
Spoiled.
Yeah, you're getting spoilt.
I'm getting spoiled.
That's just barely. But yeah, see, so you say it a couple of times, and it's just barely even a syllable.
Right. So I am spoiled, and I have a wonderful wife who tolerates my mood swings. But then again, she has the mood swings that I can't even comprehend. It's one of those things there was a while back. There was a sermon, and it's about people. When they're living, people who live in fear and who overreact to stuff, you know, because they react in such a way that whatever the situation was, it did not warrant their reaction. Basically, like Donald Trump supporters or Hillary supporters, you know, like the woman who, you know, went off on that young man, and he's like, but I didn't say anything negative. And she just goes on and on in these tirades. And it's like, I'm seeing that more and more with Jan and other people. It's like, I just said hello. And you've gone off on me.
Mm-hmm.
Again.
Yep.
I told, this is one of those things that for the next few months, I'm going to be doing a lot of self-reflection on who I am and what I'm looking for and, you know, what I want to be when I grow up. But it's one of those things where sometimes you just got to step back and look at your life and say, what's really going on? why are you so upset? Why are you so angry? And I could put a lot of it off on, you know, because of the economy and because, you know, Donald Trump is allowed to be alive. I could say a lot of that stuff.
Now. Yeah.
At some point, you do have to start looking at yourself and seeing what part of the equation you're playing. You know, are you, what factor, what variable are you putting into the equation? But speaking of Donald Trump, I think we've talked about this, how he's the perfect Frankenstein, that the Republican Party is what the Republican Party built. And I've come to the conclusion it's because of all those, you know, for every time somebody says something misogynistic or homophobic or xenophobic, and nobody put them in check. For all these years that, you know, the excuse was, oh, boys will be boys, or you're overreacting, or you're being too sensitive, and all this. And now, we have Donald Trump. And now, I loved watching the Sunday morning shows, like especially with George Stephanopoulos.
George Snuffleupagus, yes.
The Snuffleupagus. And when the Republican pundits, they're losing it. They're going batshit crazy because they don't know what to do. They have built Frankenstein, and now they can't put him back. They can't dismantle him. So we have
no, and you know, I got to be honest with you, Tracy. The more I look at his campaign, the more I think that it's. There's something manufactured about that. I mean,
this is.
I mean, do you ever look at something and just go, "Why now?"
Yeah. Why all of a sudden? Why now?
I mean, and I think the tipping point for me was earlier this week when I had that clip of Mrs. Greenspan. You know, Andrea Mitchell. All of a sudden having the scales fall from her eyes and looking at him and saying, well, he doesn't know anything about anything. He's completely ignorant. He has no knowledge of anything in the world. And I'm going, well, goddamn, Andrea, really? Now? After your networks made a few million dollars off of him? And, you know, you got Les Moonves over at CBS saying, well, you know, Donald Trump has been very good for CBS. Might not be any good for America, but he's been very good for CBS.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you son of a bitch!
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the same thing that happens, you know, the old business about the circus, you know, Barnum and Bailey and all that, and P.T. Barnum would put up a sign that said, this way to the egress, and egress just means exit. But he'd charge you a nickel. I mean, it's all probably apocryphal, but, you know, he'd charge you a nickel to get out of the circus and then another nickel to get back in. But people were too stupid to know that egress meant exit, and they thought they were going to see some goddamn bird.
Right.
Andrea Mitchell and Les Moonves are like P.T. Barnum standing outside the circus gate after it slammed shut behind you, laughing their asses off at you.
Exactly.
I mean, it's damn sure what it feels like.
It's me, the one that said it's just a sucker born every minute.
That's the same guy. Yeah, no, that's the same guy.
Yeah, or in our case, it's every second. Because, I mean, you know, but then again, it's all, like, you know, like we talked about, it's a part of the long con. We have said that, but we haven't. Yeah, but we are sitting back and watching how they have dismantled education. They have done it, civil rights. They have done everything they can to make this into a developing nation, and they're doing a good job. Because you're a bunch of people. The only thing they care about is the freaking Kardashians.
There we go. No, there we go. Hey, I got to ask you before it slips my mind. Are you keeping up with Outsiders?
Yes. I was going to ask. Woo-wee! Did you watch the
two-week
episode?
Oh, yes. I don't miss one.
Woo-wee!
Yeah, yeah, and no spoilers. Can't have any spoilers.
No, but, dude, seriously? That woman who's working for the coal company, she's scary.
She evil.
She is evil. But what, you know, I'm watching, you know, the agenda, you know, how they're kidding these people up about these jobs, and we both know that there's, you know, there's not as many jobs as they, you know, as they promised, and all the, oh yeah, man.
And you know, there's going to be, you know, they've been cleared for season two, right?
Yeah, ooh, nice.
Because we've only got what? Three or four more episodes?
Mm-hmm.
I got a feeling it's gonna be a cliffhanger from hell.
Oh, it's gonna be terrible. It's gonna be terrible.
And the characters are very complex, but of all of them, isn't there something about Hassel you just kinda like?
I like Hassel. And Sally Ann, I like those two.
Yeah.
You know, but what I like about Hassel is that I love it when people say, just because I don't have an education, that I'm stupid. And that's Hassel. I may not know a lot about reading and all this, but I'm not stupid. And like when she was trying to buy him off after they kidnapped him.
Easy. Spoilers.
Oh, sorry. But that was last week, wasn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, there's people out there there's people out there that binge watch.
Oh, that's true.
And like, you know, you can buy the whole series, like, on iTunes for, like, $30.
Yeah, that's true. Speaking of shows, have you been watching Underground as well?
I haven't gotten to yet because I got no TV.
That's right. Definitely worth watching. And then there's another one that I'm liking called Half and Leonard.
How far are we into Underground? Because I really do want. Yeah, I have a hard time committing to TV shows. But
three episodes.
Okay.
Three.
And that's on Is that on WGN too?
Yes, it is.
So maybe the first three episodes are free, like it was with Outsiders?
Yes.
Oh, cool. That means Agnes and me have something to binge watch tonight.
Yes. And you being you and a historian, and see, what I'm liking about this is the fact that they're showing that these slaves were not happy people.
Well, I was never under the impression that they were, but I guess they're, you know.
Of course. I mean, and that, you know, that they did all what they could do to survive and to try to get free. So, yeah, no, I mean, of course, you know, there's a lot, you know, modernized in the language and all that. But for the most part, I'm enjoying it. It's hard to watch because it's slavery. And especially the brutality of it. But I think you like it. And then there's Captain Leonard, which is on Sundance. I don't know if you can watch that. It's basically set in 1980s Texas. And it's about two friends that grew up. One is a black guy who was gay.
Oh, my.
A white boy. Yeah. I'm like a gay black man in Texas in the 60s and the 80s. Yeah. No, it's
Well, you know, you bring up a larger point, Tracy, and that is this. I've noticed that, like with Netflix, and I think Apple TV is the same way. I'm not sure if Amazon Prime is. I haven't really looked. But there's a trend here, because one of the things that always pissed me right off about cable and about satellite is that I knew that by buying, you know, because, you know, I'm not going to go out there and spring for all the premium channels and all of that crap.
Yeah.
But I knew that when I sprang for basic cable, that I was it goes without saying that here, and maybe the rest of the country too, but here in Appalachia, you know, you're going to get at least six channels of Electro Jesus. So that means that I'm subsidizing that crap that I never, ever, 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 ever even want to think about seeing just by subscribing to cable. So
right.
I am noticing this trend. I saw it in particular with Netflix that, you know, you can subscribe to Showtime. And
yeah.
for an additional fee, you can say, and I'm sure that it adds up to more money. But you know what? If you give me some way.
No, it doesn't, really.
It doesn't?
Well, when you think about, I mean, it does give more money, but it's still cheaper than cable.
But anything that gives me an opportunity not to have to support the electronic religion industry has to be a good thing.
Exactly.
Oh, and by the way, there's another one out there. There's another one out there. I know everybody who listens to Malloy knows who I'm talking about when I say Pterodactyl. Pterodactyl turned me on to a BBC show called The Last Kingdom.
Oh.
Oh, what a dandy. I mean, you got medieval Anglo-Saxons and you got Vikings. You know, Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. You know, I mean, you got all of that going for you. Oh, it was a good, it was real good.
Speaking of BBC, have you ever watched Looper?
No.
It's our boy, Idris Elba.
Yeah?
He plays a Scotland Yard inspector who is as troubled and scary as the people he is chasing.
Oh, that sounds fun.
It is awesome.
And of course, Idris Elba is, of course, for those who don't know, isn't he the one who gave Rush Limbaugh a mini stroke?
Probably.
My friends, there can't be a black James Bond. James Bond was never a Negro.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he gets props from me just for doing that.
Now here's the deal. Have you seen the new James Bond? Ugh.
No.
Ugh.
You're making real unhappy noises there, Tracy.
He looks anemic. It looks like he needs to have. When you had the chance to have Idris Elba or just beautiful chocolateness is just
all wrong. And instead they got some anemic little dude.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, maybe it was a bad picture or what have you, but. At least I could have gotten a buff white boy. Come on now, player. What I love about Idris is the fact that, see, I didn't know. The first thing everything I had ever seen him in, he spoke with an American or a Southern accent. Everything that I saw him in. And then I actually heard his interview, and I'm like, holy shit, he's British. And that just took me to a whole nother level with him. But what I love about him is that, did you ever watch The Wire?
Yeah.
Okay, you know, because he was in The Wire, and that's one of the first things I ever saw him in. And so, I mean, he was a cold brother in The Wire. But it would be so funny because he actually, a while back, not long after The Wire ended, and he would have brothers come up to him, talking to him, and he would have to deliberately make sure he did not speak with his British accent. Because he didn't want people to, not that he didn't want anybody to know that he was British, but he didn't want people to think that he was putting on airs or that he was faking the accent, or he just wanted to mistake, you know, he didn't want to disappoint people. Because I think he said he made that mistake once and people just lost their shit. And so he just, you know, while he was doing the show, he purposely made sure he did not speak in it with using his natural accent. But yeah, he is so fine. And did you hear his speech? Was it the Golden Globes? Was it the Golden Globes or the SAG Awards? And he won for something. And he said, "Welcome to Diversity TV." Because I think the SAG Awards last year or this year went out of their way to make sure that they were diverse. And it was also not just, you know, a bunch of old white men making the decisions or the, you know, choosing. It was actually actual actors, because that's the actors choose their nominees and all that. Oh, these assholes.
Okay, so you sent me off searching. I guess as of March 29th, somebody's saying, is Tom Hiddleston the new James Bond?
And he's the guy who plays
Jonathan Pine in The Night Manager, about which I know next to nothing. Right. I got to share something with you. This came in. This actually came in last night, and I didn't get to it because I was getting rather wrought. But this came in last night from right about airtime, and this fits nicely in our food porn segment. Bill sent this in, and. Just in case you ever travel again, and if I ever travel, I told Bill this is seriously on the list. Down around Fort Myers, Florida, Tracy.
Okay.
There is a little Marathon gas station, and of course I'm notorious for occasionally going up and getting gas station pizza after the program. It ain't nothing special.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. It ain't nothing special. Trust me. It is no food truck shrimp taco. It's just a gas station pizza. But there is a little Marathon gas station in Marathon, Florida, where for decades, okay, you got this? Decades, Tracy?
Decades.
Little Marathon gas station on Edison Avenue in Fort Myers, Florida, where for decades, Ms. Bernice Loggins has been frying up every day the best fried chicken gizzards on earth. And I mean, they show that there's a video that shows her going through the whole process. A plate of chicken gizzards is $3.99. And she sells them by the humongous box. Ms. Bernice, after she cleans the gizzards, plucking a spiny bit of cartilage from the load and the little yellow parts, the gauzy yellow coating, and make them taste, give them an off flavor, she says, "I do it by sight, by feel. When they're clean, I know." And once she's happy, Miss Bernice dredges the gizzards in a tray of flour seasoned with salt, pepper, garlic powder, and cayenne, drops them into a huge fryer basket, lowers it into rolling oil where they fry for 8 to 10 minutes until they are crisp. Her first batch is ready before sunrise every morning. She was on her third batch by 10:30 a.m., and here's the best part. She also does chicken livers. Now, it takes, you know, I'm judicious in my use of my bookmarks in my browser.
Yeah.
I bookmark this. Because there's video to go with it.
You have an old computer like I do, so we have to be very careful.
Very old, very slow. Yeah, and I just don't want to clog it. I don't want to clog it up. I mean, if I have to go and find out where the damn chicken gizzards are, I want to be able to get to it in a hurry. Because see, here's the other part of it. I found out because a buddy of mine moved to Florida. Sooner or later, if you live in West Virginia long enough, you will have a buddy who moves to Florida. A buddy of mine moved to Florida, and told me that out of Cerrito Canova Airport, which means absolutely nothing to you,
yeah.
But it's, you know, it's about
you're lucky that I even know where I've even heard of Fort Myers.
Right,
okay?
right. No, I get that. But out of Cerrito Canova Airport, I can get like a $60 one-way flight down that way.
Oh.
And, you know, that's tempting.
You know what? You know, this is how I live in the, you know, one of those places. I live in a city where I can go from one country to the other within a 20-mile radius. So I am very fortunate. The only thing is, we don't really have any good soul food restaurants anymore. You know, it's one of those things when the older black folks die and then people come in and try to pretend like they know what they're doing and they don't. So, I mean, fortunately for me, I know how to cook that way. So I'm okay. And I would never do a restaurant, but there's this certain thing that you want to be able to get your hands on. But, I would not have an issue with paying $60.
And no, and see, I mean, we got a lot of members of the Horn Family Community Congregation down in Florida, and so they might want to know. It's called Crouch's, but it's also known as the Gas and Snack, and it's inside the Marathon Gas Station at 2612 Edison Avenue, Fort Myers, Florida. Miss Bernice, I'm sorry. Miss Bernice said, it's the love I put in. If I'm not here, people turn around and walk out. So I'm here almost every day. I've got to be.
See, there's I was about to disparage gas station food, and then I just realized I think this is a Chevron or a Mobile over here in North Hollywood, and there's a Mexican restaurant inside of the gas station called, I believe it's Cilantro. Oh, my God. It's the same thing. You know, it's family-run and operated, and it's just damn good Mexican food.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well, here's one. I forget what number interstate it is that goes up from Balmer, toward York, Pennsylvania. But right after you cross over the Pennsylvania line, or maybe it's the last exit in Maryland, there's just a little cinder block gas station sitting on the side of the road. You got about a mile off the interchange, and I mean the pumps are a million years old, the paint's peeling, the signage is gone to hell, and inside there, I discovered by accident one day. The best crab cake sandwich I have ever eaten in my life.
Oh, see, and I have yet, because, see, I have yet to have a good crab cake because I live out here, and what I've been told, because even, you know, and as much as I love crab and all that, I have never had a good crab cake because we don't do crab cakes out here. The version that we do out here is nothing in comparison to, you know, what you're going to get in Baltimore.
You want to know how cosmopolitan we've got here?
Ooh, you use cosmopolitan.
Yes. Not 4 miles from where I'm sitting right now. We have a little homegrown Thai buffet.
Shut the front door. Are you serious? You have Thai food now?
We have Thai food. And there's just this lovely woman who can, I mean, her husband says she can cook the hell out of a pan of lasagna, too. She's just good. But you go in, it's not a big menu or anything. It's just, you know, she'll have some pad Thai, and she'll make a curry every day, and she always has the tom yum, the coconut ginger soup?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And she makes these little dumplings, and she makes all her own sauces. And she makes these little dumplings. I want to buy a tray of about 100 of them. And she's got this sweet Asian sauce that's almost like molasses.
Oh, yeah.
That they dip in.
I know.
But on Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays, she does pho.
Hmm.
And I walked in there one day, and lo and behold, she was just putting on a big old batch of crabs to steam. I said, hey, and I got all excited. I said, what's that going to be? She said, our dinner. Damn it.
You're like, what? I did an impromptu crab. Last Wednesday, Jen and I retired and we stopped at the store. We were going to just have a really simple grilled cheese sandwich night, you know. And by grilled cheese, you know, I'm talking about the good cheese with, you know, the thick sourdough bread.
Mm-hmm.
And as we made that decision, we're walking past the seafood counter, and they had crab legs on sale.
Hello.
So we've got king crab and snow crab and stuff and steamed that all up. And that was our, that's...
You know, Louis Gohmert would not approve of you eating those.
Well, I'm a lesbian, so I'm already going to hell.
Well, that's true. That's okay. Yeah. So you just kind of zeroed Louie out there, didn't you? Yeah, yeah. In fact, Sparky just told me you can't get West Coast crab now because of the radiation from you know where.
Right.
Damn it.
So then Saturday we decided we were going to do it again. And so, you know, I see people send me stuff on Facebook with different food porn things. So somebody sent me a picture of this thing called, okay, a cheesy garlic, cheesy blooming onion bread.
Whoa.
Something like that. So I decided that I was going to try it, and I added garlic. And that would make me think of what you were talking about. So you get a sourdough loaf and cut it, you know, in little squares. You don't cut all the way down. You open it up, and you put, you know, butter and cheese and green onions, and I threw in garlic, and I baked it.
No, now shut the front door.
Go to my Facebook page. You'll see a picture of it. And that's what I'll just send you the picture. And then, for dessert, I made...
Yeah, just post that picture over on the Horn Facebook page.
And then, for dessert, I made a lemon icebox cake.
Oh.
And guess what?
You're gonna make me have to crush up a metformin and snort it off the desk here.
See, and here's the funny part. Now I was fit to be tied. And I said that they did not, because I went to our version of the Piggly Wiggly, which is called Ralph, to get the
our version of Ralph's is called Kroger's. I don't think you've got a version of Wiggling Pig.
No, I don't. So I decided. I decided I was going to make the lemon ice pot cake, you needed instant lemon pudding, and they didn't have it at the Ralph's. So I'm like, so what I decided to do, I'm like, well, I'm just going to do what I'm going to do, and I'm going to make the custard from scratch. So I made lemon custard.
Woo!
Yeah, it was awesome. Sometimes I forget that I can't, you know, there's certain things. Sometimes I forget that I can't, not that I can cook, but that I am capable of doing other stuff. So I made the custard, and because you need a whipped cream. And since, you know, I had to go for all from scratch, so I made my own whipped cream, which I've never done. And I've made custard. Homemade custard for my banana, you know, for my banana pudding, but I've never made a flavored custard. I've just done a regular.
And you know custard. What? And by the way, I got to tell you, if you want to cheat on your banana pudding sometime, because this works really well, just get the cooked version flan mix. Because my grandmother made God's own banana pudding, but sometimes, you know, most of the time you use vanilla wafers.
Of course.
But at holidays, she would splurge and go the extra mile, and she made her banana pudding with Lorna Doones, Tracy.
Ooh.
You know, those little square shortbread cookies.
Yes.
Yeah, Lorna, so we use Lorna Doones and tons of bananas. And use that flan mix and make it with milk and cream, or make it with half and half and make it really super, super duper rich. And I have set out a full size sheet cake pan of that banana pudding and seen it gone in less than 20 minutes.
Well, it's like when I make my banana pudding, but see, I'm a pure, so I'm going to try that because see, one of the things I actually almost got into a fight. I just sent you the picture of the crab legs and the cheesy garlic blooming onion bread. So one of the things I went to a soul, like I was saying, I have soul food restaurants here going by the way of the dodo, and it was a sure sign of the world coming to an end when I went. Because one of the things I always do when I go to a soul food restaurant, I scan the desserts and look for banana pudding because, you know, it's banana pudding. So I would always make sure I saved enough room for the banana pudding. So I ordered my banana pudding, and it was store-bought custard. It was, you know, banana, vanilla. And I called the waitress. I said, you know, your great-grandmama is turning in her grave.
Oh.
You know, I was so pissed. I'm like, yeah, you know, because see, the thing, you can't, I was just undone. And another thing about banana pudding.
Priorities, damn it.
You know, and another thing about banana pudding is I learned this trick a long time ago with it that you cannot. You always have to let your custard cool before you pour it over the bananas.
Oh, yes, you do.
Because if you don't, you will have bananas blacker than me.
They will. I have been known to squeeze just a little tiny bit of lemon juice over the bananas.
That works too.
It does not do them any harm, and it adds a little bit of piquancy. I think is the word I'm looking for.
You know, I like that word. Did you get the picture yet?
No. Did you send it to my email?
No, I sent it to. I put it on your Facebook page.
Okay. No. That's okay. I can get to Facebook.
I sent it to the Horn family.
Because there's going to be weeping involved, I'm pretty sure.
So it's going to be weeping.
Now, dang it. Okay.
There will be weeping and wailing and rendering of garments in the nasty.
Oh! Oh! Yeah, I had to scroll down. Carl put a link on top of you.
Ah.
Oh, man.
That is.
Yeah. And that's the bread?
That's the bread.
Stop it. Stop it a lot.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, like I said, that's like
a sourdough bowl.
Mm-hmm. I just call it, that's what you call it. I just say a round piece of sourdough.
Yeah, right.
Is
no,
that how you pronounce it?
I don't know. Maybe there's an accent grave over the E. Maybe it's a boule. And by God, if it is, someone will email me and go, no, God damn it, Bob, it's a boule.
Somebody sent it to me on my Facebook page, and I'm like, I'm going to do this. And it was not hard to do. Like I said, you just cut, you know, the bread at, you know, the angles, you open it up, and then you put butter. I melted the butter, I did a whole big old, like, send me a cube of butter, it's bad. And with, you know, cut up the onion, the green onion, and some garlic, mix it in. And
now, see, you could use ramps in that.
That's what I was thinking about.
You'd have to be very, very judicious about it. But you could use ramps in that.
Yeah. And so what I did was, because I had cheese left over still from mac and cheese, so I mixed mozzarella and jack and cheddar cheese and put it in between, and then you bake it.
You know what I found to be just deliciously melty? That I mean, I just love it. Havarti.
Yes. I just had some Havarti. Dad and I did sandwiches the other day, and I got Havarti cheese and what's the spicy? Oh, it's not salami. It's thin. It's not prosciutto.
Capicola?
Capicola. I got that, and we have boar's head Now wait for it. Buffalo chicken breast.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
That and that with the capicola and some Havarti cheese on a French roll. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. That's working for me. That's working a lot.
Mm-hmm. See, you know, because see, this is one of those things. See, this because I have been feeling down, and it's just, and I'm like, I know what's wrong.
This will just, you know, no. I was just thinking the same thing, Tracy. It you know, it perks me up because, and I don't know how the rest of the Horn family community congregation feels about this, but I'm having a blast, and it looks like they're having fun in the chat room.
Because
every now and then. You got to step back from the filth and the toxicity.
You have, and that's like I said, this is one of those things I was telling Jan about the other day. I said, I have been so profoundly unhappy and just, I'm now evil. And I'm like, ooh, and it's just, it's the toxicity of this going on and I'm allowing it in my life. And it's even messing with my face, and I'm just like, oh my God, what is really going on? I mean, at some point, I have to get happy again. I mean, because as much as I love my wife, and you know, and my life is, and here's what, this is when you know there's something going on, because my life is going really well right now. You know, I'm going to have the oven of wonder. I'm going to have this wonderful, beautiful refrigerator with, you know, the French doors at the top and the pull-out freezer at the bottom. And I'm going to have a backsplash, a stainless steel backsplash, okay? I mean, the things that you get excited about. I'm going to have a washer and dryer for the first time that I own, right? I'm going to actually be able to go out in the backyard and hang up and do my laundry so I can, you know, not have, because we live in California and I don't have to use my dryer all the time. I don't hate my job as much as I used to, because I have this really good, this client that I have that's paying me very well to be a mammy. And that's a whole other conversation. And so I should not be happy. But there's this something that's eating away with me at me, and I just can't put my finger on it.
Well, no, I think that we as Americans, Tracy, have fallen prey to a particular malady ever since the for-profit media figured out that politics was just one long goddamn reality television show. We're just beaten over the head with it. And it's like it's like there's nowhere you can go to get away from it, you know. I'm surprised Sesame Street hasn't, you know, hosted a town hall, or that there hasn't been a town hall meeting in a fucking bass boat, out on some lake in redneck America.
Right.
We're bombarded with it. I mean, the Stones 50 years ago were singing about 19th nervous breakdown, and reality TV hadn't even, and TV itself hadn't even caught on that much by then.
No,
the American people are in a constant state of near psychosis with this stuff. I got to get away from it sometimes, and I don't get away from it nearly enough.
No, and I think about you on the real, Bob, because I'm like, you're doing this 5 days a week. You are seriously taking one for the team. Just by, you know, you and Carol Baker and all these people who, you know, actually listen to and dissect and get information out there. You guys are doing, when you talk about ramps and sending me some for garlic, and I mean, how do y'all need to be sprinkling that around you to just keep the vampires away?
Well, that's the problem. Hillbilly vampires like ramps too. I mean,
right. Well, Donald Trump is in a hillbilly.
Yeah, that That dumb bastard would probably flip right the hell out of, around a bunch of ramps.
Right. Here, you know, remember, and every time I finally remember to tell you this, one of those things that you talk about, you know, how hillbillies are like the last people that you could, that everybody can make fun of and get away with, you know, and it's so funny. I wrote a paper a couple of years ago about, you know, the one thing that I had going for me before I fell in love with Jan was the fact that I was heterosexual. Because at one point, it was, you know, being gay was one of those things that you could be, that could be made fun of. And it was okay to, because gay people, everybody, any minority or anybody, any group can make fun of gay people and nobody would say anything, right? It's by how things have changed. Do you know I have more legitimacy and more power as a lesbian now? Because they can look sideways at me as a black woman, but when I say, oh, and my wife, the whole thing changes.
Good. I mean, about damn time.
Yeah, but still, it sucks that I'm still black. I still get treated like shit because I'm black, but now that I'm a lesbian, then people think twice about being stupid. And it's pretty fucking awesome.
Amen. Earther in the chat room just said food porn, politics, food porn, politics. It's like a lasagna.
Oh, speaking of lasagna.
Oh, no.
No. Well, I call it, it's my Mexican lasagna. I call it enchilada pie.
Oh, I'll take cards in that game.
Okay, so basically it's just, you know, because... Let me tell you the story of how the enchilada pie came about. Because mama loves enchiladas, but mama's lazy. So mama ain't rolling all those the tortillas. Because she got to dip them in the enchilada sauce and, you know, put the meat and the cheese and the onions and all this. And you got to roll that shit. But no, with the enchilada pie, you don't have to do all that. So, you know, you do the chili sauce and you know, layer it and all that. And then you just do your cheese and your cilantro and your onions and your meat. And then layer, 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 layer. And next thing you know, that's a lot of pie. And it's like I said, the great part.
Yeah, you'd have to, I'd hurt myself with that.
Oh, it's scary hurt. You can do some serious damage to your body with enchilada. You know, I've already decided that, you know, especially like I said, once we get the yard together, I can't wait to have next year. I'm going to have an actual Cinco de Mayo party. You know, well, the American version of it. I think next year Cinco de Mayo is on a Friday or a Saturday, and I'm going to do it all. I'm going to have agua frescas. I'm going to do horchata. You know, the whole, you know, and have taco bar, the whole shebang.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Have you ever had horchata? Do you even know what that is?
I know the word. I don't think I know what it is.
Well, think of rice pudding, but a very thin, think of how rice pudding would taste if it was like a milk.
Oh, that could be yummy. Yes. Oh, you know, I think I've seen it in the Latino section of the grocery store here. No, really, we've got one. We've got one.
That's
let's see. How many? One, two, three. Okay, so Tim just spammed the chat room regarding your Cinco de Mayo party next year. Am I invited? 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 Please invite me, Tracy. Please invite me, Tracy. Please invite me, Tracy. Please invite me, Tracy. Please invite me, Tracy.
I invited him to my 50th birthday party, and he hasn't responded. I invited him on Facebook. And so I've invited him to everything. Of course he's invited. He hasn't responded to whether or not he's coming to my, and I'm putting you on blast. You haven't responded as to whether or not you're coming to my birthday party.
Oh, well. Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. The excuses are now beginning. I didn't get anything.
Check your events. check the events part in Facebook, and you should have it.
Okay. Okay. That's excusable because I'm kind of lost on the events notifications too.
Right. I've done the same thing. So check your anybody. I invited him and Billable. I invited them both, and I put it in the events part of their Facebook. So I did a mass.
Oh, we need a horn. We need a horn travel fund. Damn it.
Oh, you know what? I told you. You know what, though? We do need a horn travel. And if there was any reason for you to come to California, it would be...
I am so working on one. Believe you me. Meanwhile, there's Agnes in there working on a reason to come out there and not go home.
You know, it's so funny because I think Billable and I talked about that. So we need to get a horn. If nothing else, if not for my birthday, but to get you out here next year to go see Hamilton.
That would be fun. That would be big fun. And I've been telling folks, I just finished a wonderful book on Hamilton and Burr. I think you probably come away with a little bit different impression of Hamilton from the musical than you would from the book.
Right.
He was, and I want to make sure I use the right technical term, kind of a prick. Yeah. Okay. So, but still, no, I want to see that show. I want to see that show.
I renewed our season passes. The season coming up is going to be okay, but the main reason why I renewed it is because I know for how much, I think our tickets for this whole season for both of us is like $600 a year to make payments. That's still cheaper than how much it would be for me to get two sets of tickets to see it if I went to the East Coast or whatever.
No doubt.
You know, and so it was worth it. And so I talked to when I renewed my season tickets. I asked about additional tickets. They said this show is going to be so hot that normally you can get usually get maybe four additional tickets per household or whatever per season pass holder. They're only allowing two because they know people are going to be able to. I don't be able, if I wanted to, about I could sell those tickets. I'm not going to because I'm really Speaking of tickets, next week is going, not next week, week after, Kinky Boots. Very much looking forward to seeing that.
That's a spectacle. That's an extravaganza.
You know, we missed it when it was here last year because I was sick and we couldn't get a replacement ticket. So I made it. So it's only going to be here for a week and I made sure that I got tickets for before I left again. So we're going to go see that on the 13th. But yeah, no, I have to find a way to get happy again.
because it'll all consume you. Yeah, you got to figure out a way to get away. I mean, I had a lovely note from our buddy Dr. Allen down in Texas, and he said something. He said, "Bob, we got to figure out a way for you to write a book. You got to write a book."
Yeah.
And I would love to.
What is the word that cleansing? Catharsis.
Catharsis. The other word is sabbatical. I forget how it works in academia, but like once you're tenured and you've worked for like 7 years, you get a year off to go and work inside your specialty. And I'm not sitting here complaining or anything. I think I got a book in me. I may have several, but.
Oh, I've been told that I need to write a book because of this. And I'm like, when and how?
Right, because the thing about writing is that it's a solitary effort. You can't, for all the stories about Hemingway swanning around the cafes of Paris and whatnot, and I just, I use Hemingway because it's, Kerouac and all the beatniks and whatever. The fact of the matter is, when you sit down to write, it is a solitary, lonely, single-minded, just, you know, soul-searing experience. And so it's difficult to do at the same time that you're doing something else.
Right.
And I don't know, somewhere down the road, you know, I don't know, it would be wonderful. You know, maybe, you know, go and rent a little shack down by the beach or something and start work on, you see what I'm saying.
Well, I'm excited. One of the things that I'm very much excited about as since we're, you know, we're moving into this house is that the third bedroom is basically going to be my office. And I'm going to have the chances to be able to go into a room and close the door, which is something I've never had. And I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Well, Hemingway coined the term, a clean, well-lighted place.
You know, Audre Lorde, in one of her essays, talked about how writing is for rich people. Writing novels is for rich people because it takes, you know, reams of paper, a quiet place of your own and all this. Poetry is the writing form for the working folk because you have to, you don't have that time. You have to snatch time away to write. You have moments that you can just write a quick poem on like a piece of wrapping paper or.
No. I mean, I sit down, I do poetry and, you know, I've got some that I've been working on for years that are still, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've shared them out and stuff. You've probably seen some of them on Facebook, but they're still works. They're always going to be works in progress because you sit there and you go, no, I'll add it, no, take away that. You can, the great Zen master poet Basho spent 60 years perfecting one haiku.
Well, that's OCD.
No, that's yeah. Well,
I'm being an asshole, but. It is.
So, I mean, it lends itself to that. So I don't know. One of these days.
Well, I've been told, you know, because they have a couple of the classes at school talk about, you know, that you write your own memoir, and the whole quarter is you just writing your memoir, and that's 10 weeks of writing.
Oh, that'd be fun. That would be fun. Know?
And I've been thinking about that, and I'm like, I mean, because I have a hell of a story, and I think if I write it, start actually writing it, and letting other people in on my story, then I will find that there are other people who have lived the hell that I've lived, and now that you can survive it. When you let other people into your life and you let other people realize that you're not the only one, that they're not the only ones going through the crazy, it calls.
Oh, no, you're knocking down walls. You absolutely are.
It starts to build community. It starts, and this is what they don't want us to do, Bob. They want us to isolate ourselves. They want us to make ourselves think that we're the only ones going through this. And if you tell, you share your story.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Patty Duke passed away a couple of days ago.
Yes, I put them in. Yeah.
And she did, you know, 20, 30 years ago, she did something very, very courageous. She did something that nobody in Hollywood had really done. She came out as bipolar.
Yes.
And talked about her bipolar disorder.
And somebody who suffers, who is bipolar, I thank God for her.
And she spent the rest of her life trying to make life better for people who suffer from bipolar disorder.
Because, let me tell you, it's terrible. I can't even... Like I said, I know a lot of my malady and my malaise comes from my mental health issues, but it and I know there's other people who suffer from it, but it's still, even when you know people are there to support you and you know you're not the only one, there's still the stigma. And especially being Black, holy shit, it's like, you know, I come from a culture of people who, well, you're not praying hard enough. You know, don't give in to it. And that's not just Black people. I know that's across the board, but still, it's just like, it keeps you isolated. And it's terrible. And I have to catch myself my thing is more on the depression side than the mania, because I now know what my triggers are, but it's still those lows that are so, it's like a gut punch. And it's, a, you know, it's like, I call it, what did I used to call it? It's like sinking into the abyss of just, and you're stuck in just tar. It's like, I remember the first time I realized what was going on with me, and I went to La Brea, I was at the La Brea tar pits, and I'm watching, you know, how they have the, you know, the figures, the dinosaurs being sucked into the tar and not being able to pull themselves
yeah.
out. That's how I felt.
Yeah. It's exactly.
That is how it is.
That's, yeah.
That, you can't pull yourself out. No matter what you do, you cannot pull yourself out of it.
And yet somehow you've managed to make the effort. And you know, it's you never I guess you never get completely well.
You don't.
But it's learning management skills. And I was going to mention something to you a minute ago. You know, I imagine there's a lot of classes available to you. You mentioned that memoir class, and it got me thinking about something. A number of years ago, and as far as I know, it's still going, there was something called the Progoff, PROGOFF, journaling method. And I took a journaling class way, way, way back when I was riding my dinosaur to West Virginia University. And it is, it's really
okay,
intensive.
Stone and biting.
Yeah, right. And it's just huge. I mean, it's amazing because it's all about writing dialogue and dialoguing with issues and people and your past and your history. And Ira Progoff was the guy who pioneered it, and it's based on Jungian psychology, I think. I found it immensely enlightening. By the way, courtesy of Carol Baker, a little factoid coming our way toward the end of the program here, Tracy. 27,000 people in the Bronx for Bernie.
Hey now.
27,000 people. When is America going to wake up? I mean, I don't mean to drag us back into the swamp, but when's America going to wake up and realize this is the guy that needs to take us forward?
Meanwhile we've got
that quote from Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton. You know, and it was just a Greenpeace organizer, okay? Just a Greenpeace organizer, and the next thing you know, Hillary's pointing her finger and sticking it in her face and saying, I've got friends who are lobbyists for the fracking industry and people who work in the hydrocarbon industry, and they give me money, and I'm sick of Bernie Sanders people lying about me. Yeah, you know, is this the moment that she goes, I mean, this feels like a moment, Tracy.
Yeah. Because we're not lying about you, Hill. We're not. You are, you know, because I'm at the point now that I just stopped saying shit about her on my Facebook page, because I don't want to just have to block friends, you know.
And oh, there's a whole lot of blocking going on out there right now.
You know, and I'm like, you know, say, especially when it's Black people, I'm like, you know, what type of fucking things that, I mean, let's, I think I actually did post something on Facebook on my page about, you know, Hillary versus Bernie. You know, there's this young man who did a side by, you know, basically saying, you know, I'm not saying anything negative about Hillary or anything like that, but just let's just do the side-by-side comparison. You know, who was that person that she was, that she supported? Barry Goldwater. She's a Goldwater girl, for God's sakes. Yes, you know, later on, she, you know, said, oh, that was probably not a good idea. But again, when do we have to, at what point does she have to, this, you know, I'm tired of her having to, we don't have time to wait for her to evolve.
No, that evolve button's in pieces on the ground at this point.
You know, we do not have time for her to get her ass, her head out of her ass, when it, you know, and step away. I mean, Hillary, you have enough money. You know, you don't need any more money. And at some point, you have to realize that you, because of Bernie Sanders, were you the one that talked about, maybe on a couple of shows back, how she thought this was going to be a clean sweep, and that, you know, she had this big war chest to fight whoever was going to be the Republican nominee.
Right.
And now she doesn't, because Bernie Sanders.
Oh, well, you should have seen one of the emails that went out in Hawaii from her campaign manager, Robbie Mook. He sent out this email saying, "Friend, we need your help right now. Our opponent has outspent us 27-1 in Hawaii."
I get those Hillary emails too, and I laugh.
She's got enough money to burn a wet elephant, Tracy.
Exactly. I mean, I'm upset because Bernie was here last week.
The only reason she was outspent 27-1 in Hawaii is because they didn't think Hawaii was worth spending money on.
That's why.
Although, the fact of the matter is, for somebody who claims that her campaign has greater outreach to minority communities, as I noted, Hawaii is the most racially diverse state in the Union.
Is it really?
Non-Latino whites make up only 23% of the population.
Wow.
So what does that say about the people who went to the polls in Hawaii?
I'm still tripping on Alaska.
Well, again, a racially diverse population. Relatively speaking, a huge indigenous population. Washington State, the seventh most racially diverse state in the Union.
Where does California lie?
You're probably up there too.
I am so excited about June.
Well, you got a right to be, and you know.
Because you're moving, and I had to make sure I changed my voter registration so I can, because I vote by mail. But, you know, I had to make sure that, you know, because I've been changing addresses, you know, left and right and stuff. And I'm like, oh, shit, I got to change my voter registration. But I am so, like I tell Jan, Jan's like, why are you voting for Bernie Sanders? I said, because he's the only one that gets it.
Yeah, exactly.
And yet there's things that he needs to, I wish he can get across more across to the African, to the black vote and all that. I do. But I'm seeing that there are more black people supporting him. I wish that Black Lives Matter would stop fucking around and say, oh, we're not going to support anybody. I'm like, you know what? That's another. But I'm loving Dr. Brother Cornel West. You know?
Yeah, you mean Talking Truth?
Right. I'm very disappointed in Dolores Huerta. Very disappointed in her because I don't know this for a fact, but I have a very deep feeling that if Cesar Chavez was still alive, he would be supporting Bernie Sanders. Just from what I know about the man.
Yeah, I no doubt. Hey, Tracy, we've done it again.
I got to
get out of here. Thanks for the lovely conversation. I appreciate it, and thanks for the food porn photos. And thanks for kicking in on Beating the Swede this evening. Thank you so much.
Yeah, not a problem. Do you want me to do that for today, or do you want me to do it for tomorrow? How do you? I mean, it doesn't really matter how I do it.
Whatever's best for you.
Okay, I could. I'm just going to send it in however you want to apply it. That's all on you.
All right. We'll talk soon.
All right.
Bye
we'll
now.
We'll talk soon. Bye.
Bye. Tracy, the lady cab driver, in a lovely conversation for A Thorn in the Side Thursday. Thank you, one and all, for beating the Swede. This is huge. Thank you. And by the way, overnight, thank you to Chris in Germany. Thank you very kindly to Daniel and to Linda and to Bob and to Larry. Big thanks to Larry. Thank you to Diane. Thank you to Tim. Thanks for the challenge tomorrow. Thank you to Jack. Hope I'm not missing anybody here. Thank you, one and all, for another Beat the Swede month. We did it. I didn't think we could. I hoped we could. I didn't think we could, but we did it. The Swede is beaten. Thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful evening. Friday on the front porch tomorrow. Got to get out of here. Good night, y'all.